Radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
And welcome to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5. I can't do that twice. Don't ask me to do it again. That's weird. That's cool stuff. And I have a cold. It is Labor Day. Phil Conlon is here.
Good afternoon.
And later in the show, Phil and I are going to talk about Labor Day. We're going to talk about the upcoming elections. We're going to talk about the labor issues. There's also going to be the Ontario Federation of Labor is meeting this November. So there's a lot going on. But we've had a very important interview with a wonderful, outstanding, heroic woman, Siri Sundarsinghe. And that was pre-recorded, and we're going to hear that now. And Siri has a very important letter that has been sent to the leaders of Kenya and Uganda. By way of contextualizing your letter concerning the assassination of your husband, I want to just say for our listeners that in 1998, in Arusha, Tanzania, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda was just beginning to have trials of people accused of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide in Rwanda in 1994. And when the trial opened, there were speeches made by the president of the court and by the prosecutor, whose name was Louise Arbour, Canadian judge, and they said, "We are trying, our goal is to end the culture of impunity, that is, where crimes, high crimes, are committed in countries by leaders, people in responsibility, who enjoy impunity, and we're going to put an end to that." And that was 1998. And on May 16, 1998, Seth Sundarsinghe, former Minister of the Interior of Rwanda in a new government formed in July 1994, was brutally gunned down in the city of Nairobi, only a few hours' drive from Arusha. So it's very important to us to have this opportunity to speak to Siri Sundarsinghe about that incident and to say that here we are, it is 2019, in May 16, 2019, you have written this letter, and it is titled, "A Call for Justice in Seth Sundarsinghe Murder in Nairobi," by President Paul Kagame. His killing squad. You would like to end the culture of impunity, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would like the culture of impunity to end, indeed. In impunity for crimes committed or ordered by people in government position, leaders, heads of state, army chiefs, things like that. It is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Let's remind people, you point out in the letter, and this is so important to me, that the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, has, what prompted your letter is he's basically said that he did order the execution of your husband.
Yes. That's correct.
In what form? How did you learn of this, and what was your reaction?
When I heard it, he actually did it on two occasions at a couple of weeks interval. The first occasion was on March this year, the date of March 9th, 2019, during the Rwandan government leaders retreat. They have this retreat every year, and it takes place in northern Rwanda, a town called Gabiro, in the northern province, not very far from the border with Uganda. And during that moment, there was some tension between Rwanda and Uganda. Actually, they had Rwanda had taken the unilateral step to cross the border at Gatuna, one of the border posts between Rwanda and Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And during that retreat, Kagame went on saying a lot of things. And then all of a sudden, as he was referring to that new sort of crisis between Rwanda and Uganda, he said something along these lines, like, do you remember a certain Sendashonga set? And then he went on to say that this man, they had, he quoted Gerard Prunier, who wrote a book, in which he referred to having known Sendashonga, having introduced him to some Ugandan officials, including people in the army, in particular the General Salim Saleh, who happens to be a brother of President Museveni. So Kagame referred to that book, and he says that Prunier says that he thinks that Sendashonga was killed because he had met with Ugandan officials.
Mm-hmm.
So Kagame said, there is some truth in that. We knew about this, and that is how he happened to die, and I am not apologetic about it. Just like that.
Yes.
Then, a few weeks later, he gave an interview to Jeune Afrique magazine. You may know it. It's a very well-known Francophone, mm-hmm. I think, magazine which comes on a bi-monthly basis, in which he basically repeated the same thing.
Yes.
So, I mean, that was quite an astonishing revelation. Even though, of course, for me and my family, wasn't really anything he was saying we didn't know, because all along we have known that Sendashonga Set was killed at the instigation of Paul Kagame.
Mm-hmm.
But this time he basically said it himself. So I thought that this is something that I should not let pass. Given that, indeed, the trial for the murder of Sendashonga had concluded in 2001 in Nairobi with the acquittal of three people who had been initially arrested on the pretext that they are the ones who had killed him, but then the trial revealed that they were not the ones. There was absolutely no evidence to incriminate them, and they were released.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, my lawyer then, had written to the Attorney General of Kenya asking for new investigations because, somebody had been killed and no culprit had been arrested. And mm-hmm. during the trial, a lot of evidence from the investigation, mm-hmm. even the judge himself concluded by saying that everything points to show that Seth Sendashonga was killed at the instigation of the Rwandan government for political motive.
Yes.
So this is how, but then after that, nothing happened on the Kenyan side, despite later from my lawyer. So when Kagame made these revelations this year, I thought this is a good reason for me to put back the matter to the Kenyan government for them to take their responsibilities.
Yes.
Because even somebody says that kind of words, which are very far-reaching, the least I expect that the Kenyan government should reopen the case and Kagame at least come as a witness, because clearly the way he says it, that he knows something about mm-hmm. the murder of Seth. So that was really the context in which I wrote the letter, and as you rightly recall, I chose the date of May 16th because that was the anniversary of the 21 years after the murder of Sendashonga to make that public, to write that open letter which I made public, on that occasion.
Yeah, it is so poignant and so timely, and it is a call actually on all parties, everyone who has taken up this subject, to face the facts. And I'm so glad you called out Mr. Kagame, but also those who have the responsibility to arrest criminals. We should remind our listeners that my memory is that at first there was a denial. And as a matter of fact, I saw quotes in various papers in East Africa where they tried to attribute the death of your husband, the murder, to just differences between people they called extremists and laughed about it and said, well, this is the way they are. And so, and now here they stand in front of the world and say, we did it. But they lied at the time. I mean, it's one thing to say we don't know anything about it, but they immediately began to say, oh, it must have been some extremist. That's the way those people are.
Yes, you are absolutely right. After the murder of Sendashonga, the Kigali government went to great lengths to deny they had any involvement in it. They came up with all sorts of theories which were more ludicrous than the other. And now, you see, after all these years, he actually comes and says, you know what, I did it, and I'm not apologetic about it. So not only there is that crime, but also lying for 21 years.
Yes.
It's astonishing.
And he's in contempt of the government of Kenya. He's in contempt of the government of Uganda, and certainly in contempt of those courts. He's making a mockery of this, of what should have been a fair and open process so we could establish the truth. We're speaking to Siri Sendashonga. She is the widow of Seth Sendashonga, who was assassinated May 16, 1998. By the way, there is an excellent documentary titled He Who Knew Too Much by Julian Ellie of Montreal, an excellent filmmaker. And I, by the way, I hope that this is in circulation. I hope it will be revived because of your letter, make it to people's attention, because you've been trying to establish the facts, the truth, and get some justice now for all these years. But I want to raise this question. Another thing that troubled me, or I noted in the statement by the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, he said that he crossed the line and therefore, you know, we did this. He had been talking to Ugandan officers. However, he forgets something. Your husband was the victim of an attempted assassination in 1996, more than a year previous. And he was wounded, and his driver was wounded, and I believe the driver, was it his nephew, died as a result of the wounds.
Yeah, his nephew who then died of the consequences of the injury sustained.
And the man who did it was captured.
That's correct.
Tell us about that.
So that's very good to recall, because indeed, when he says that in that interview, the fear and the statement, the speech he made in Gabiro during the Rwandan leader's retreat, that he said Sendashonga had crossed the line, that he was talking to Ugandan, officials, particularly in the army, who were helping him to invade Rwanda to stabilize the country, which is a complete bunch of lies. First of all, Sendashonga was not a military man. He was a politician. He was, he was saying what the Rwandan government was doing in terms of, human rights abuses, crimes, etc., killings, illegal killings, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. And as you rightly say, when he left the government of Rwanda at the end of August 1995, after being slightly over 1 year a minister of interior, during which time he had the opportunity to see many, many, many cases, thousands and thousands of cases of things that the crimes that the army under General Paul Kagame, who was then vice president and minister of defense, was committing across the country. And he had documented all these things, had been writing on an almost daily basis to Kagame, bringing to his attention all these reports that he was receiving from across the territory of Rwanda, and nothing was done. So after, you know, some crisis in the government due to, in part, that security situation, which clearly was not being handled properly, Sendashonga left Rwanda, came to Kenya, because that's where I was living with the children. And just he left Rwanda in November 95. So in February 96, 26th of February 96, our first attempt on his life took place. And the person who was arrested on the scene of the crime with a gun, his hot, warm in his hands, was a guy, a military attaché at the Rwandan embassy in Nairobi. And that really caused a major row, diplomatic incident between the government of Rwanda and government of Kenya, because Kenya asked for Kigali to waive the diplomatic immunity of this man so that he could be tried. Kigali refused and preferred to have him, you know, deported back to Rwanda, and the embassy was closed for many, many months because it was such a serious incident. So at that time, there was nothing like SET has met with Ugandan officials, none of that. You know. So when 2 years later, they killed him, and now they are, and this time they did it, he died. And they are saying that it's because he had crossed a line by meeting the Uganda. Of course, you can see it's completely unfounded. Because how do they explain what the incident, the first attempt of February 1996?
Yeah. Well, I think it's so important, and also to remember there was a death there, and which, you know, the blood still asks for justice. And
exactly. The nephew, Seth's nephew, who was with him in the car, and he unfortunately, he sustained the injuries and he died, a few days later after that.
Yeah, you know, there's a proverb that they say that no one is as deaf as the one who will not hear. Seth himself was pursuing that matter. He knew the individual who had attempted to kill him, and as you say, it was what they call a smoking gun. They caught him with the gun, and he was a Rwandan official. It really shows that there are. I guess we could call them political powers who don't want any harm to come to Paul Kagame. It's a very worrying thing, particularly when you think of that language of the International Tribunal, which said, we're going to end the culture of impunity. And speaking of that tribunal, Seth Sendashonga had met with the French lawyer, Pascal Besny, and he had agreed to come to the International Criminal Tribunal to tell what he knew about the realities of Rwanda. And I think he had agreed to that maybe 10 days before.
Yes, that's correct.
He
was due to travel to Arusha in the week following the day they killed him. So just that month of May, he was scheduled to go to testify at the tribunal in Arusha as an expert witness, as you mentioned, to just sort of give information, about the context in Rwanda, etc. So he's killed just a few days before. And as we all know, the Rwandan government had infiltrated the International Tribunal in Arusha. So there is no doubt in my mind that they knew that Seth would be coming, and that could have been one of the reasons that they decided to kill him, even though, of course, there are many other reasons, that one can think of. But the fact that he had agreed to go to Arusha to testify as an expert witness is indeed something that I think the whole world should remember.
Yes, I was told by a United Nations investigator that Seth had visited to Arusha, and the court was quite aware that he had been there. And so I think you're right. I think that he was being very closely tracked, and they must have been very worried about the problem of a former justice minister in the current the sitting government of Rwanda appearing in that courtroom.
Although, of course, as what I know is he was not going there to testify against or in defense of any particular accused.
No, he was going as someone who just could talk about the reality as a true expert.
As what they call expert witnesses.
Yes. Yeah, that, by the way, we should make that point. Whenever experts do appear, they are make themselves available because they have knowledge that they wish to share. It may or may not bear on the actual case of the accused. They're there to say what they know. And he certainly was a knowledgeable individual. He had lived through the entire experience of 1990, early 90s Rwanda, and the war and the massacres of civilians. By the way, we haven't said the word, I don't think, Kibeho, but he had been one who, in conscience, spoke out when refugees were killed at Kibeho. Am I right?
Yes, he was, because when the Kibeho massacres occurred, he was really shocked by it and also by all the lies that the then president and vice president were trying to say to the world by pretending only 300 people were killed, but actually there were thousands and thousands of corpses, and Fred had been among the very first people to get on site before Kagame and then President Pastor Bizimungu arrived. And, he was talking with some of the contingent in the UNAMI, the UN, the United Nations missions in Rwanda. And he told me he spoke with the Australian, contingent. He spoke with the Ghanaians who were there. And they told him that in a small sort of circumscribed area, they had counted up to 1,000 bodies by that time, and then they sort of got tired because it was a huge, camp, for internally displaced people. So I think now there is a general agreement with from all many sources of people who were there when it happened that up to 8,000 people might have been killed in Kibeho. So,
You were there yourself as his...
Yeah, the government was trying to pretend it's only 300 people who died, and Fred was like, no, it's much more than that.
In retrospect, we all understand how really courageous he was being. Did you appreciate at that time how dangerous it was becoming to actually mention that civilians, refugees, had been murdered outright by the parts of the army?
Yeah, it was dangerous and he knew it. But you see, Seth was a man of conviction. Mm-hmm. He believed very deeply in democratic ideals. He valued human rights as an absolute thing. Mm-hmm. And there's no way he was going to keep quiet about what was happening in Rwanda, particularly after he had seen it with his own eyes in those 13 months during which he was Minister of Interior. So, and then unfortunately, the things continued and they're still continuing up to now as we speak now. I feel, that killings, extrajudicial killings are a daily occurrence in that country. Mm-hmm. So he knew it was dangerous, but he was one of those people for him, this kind of taking a position when human life is being attacked. For him, it was a non-negotiable, sort of situation. So, and he died for that. He paid a very heavy price. But for him, there was no way. He was prepared to keep quiet, knowing, seeing what was happening in Rwanda and the dangerous trajectory on which the RPF government was putting the country, having been himself a member of the RPF initially. He was deeply, deeply disappointed by how things turned up after the genocide. That, it turned into a brutal dictatorship rather than the democratic country, which he thought initially they were fighting for, and that's the reason why he had joined them.
Yeah. Well, he was courageous for Stan Trugeri Mungu, and you yourself and others were very courageous. I don't think the world understood how dangerous that situation was. We now in the years have unfolded, and it's very evident. But it was a tremendous act of courage for Seth Sendashonga to speak up. I want to return just briefly to the matter of what actually happened. My understanding is that about on the date, May 16, 1998, in the late afternoon in Nairobi downtown, I think it had been raining, two individuals on motorbikes with AK-47s pulled alongside the vehicle, and your husband was in the vehicle. It was Wikipedia says it was a United Nations Environment Program vehicle, which seems significant to me, I mean, just given the brazenness of what happened, because that was a very professional murder, and the driver also died. Could you tell us who he was?
Yeah, so you're right. So on that day, May 16, 1998, which was a Saturday, I remember as if it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. So Seth was driving, and he was indeed in a car that carried the UN plate number, because the car was in my name, and I was an employee of the United Nations in Nairobi, the UN Environment Program, UNEP, as you say. Mm-hmm. So he was coming from the UN compound, actually, because in that compound there was a duty-free shop for the staff of the UN, where we could get some sort of goodies on a duty-free basis, like, you know, alcohol and things like that. And he had gone there to purchase some wine, some beers, because on the following day, which was a Sunday, our youngest child was going to have his first communion. So we're actually preparing, you know, like to have a party to receive some guests for the child's first communion. So as he was coming from there, coming back home in one of the suburbs in Nairobi, not far from downtown, called Parkland, so that's an area between downtown and Gigiri, where the UN compound is situated. Mm-hmm. At a roundabout, his car stopped. He was with his driver, Jambo Skongri Ukeye, just to sort of give priority to another car that was coming. And behind them, there was another car which apparently has been following them, but of course they didn't know they were being followed. So as Sendashonga's car stopped, this other car behind them also stopped. Two men got out of the car with Kalashnikov AK-47 rifles and spread his car with bullets. Mm-hmm. From both sides of the window, the side of the driver and the side of the passenger mm-hmm. in the front seat. And then the Seth died instantly. The driver also, you know, he didn't die immediately. He died in hospital, but obviously he lost consciousness, and, you know. So the two people left the car in which they were driving, crossed the street on foot, running on the other side of the roundabout, where there was another car parked, in which they entered and took off. So it was something that clearly had been planned, because that other car was waiting to pick them. They left the car behind, and then apparently it caused a huge traffic jam, as you can imagine. But anyway, so police came, and then they took the car, took the two bodies, and then to hospital. When they go to hospital, that's when the driver dies. But Sendashonga, they found him already dead. He died like almost on the spot. So then they contacted the UN security officer, who got the information, and then he contacted me to pass the news. So that's how the whole thing happened.
Yes.
It was really like day about like 4 p.m. in the afternoon, which of course is still very, kind of broad daylight.
It had all the markings. All the markings, yes, of a state, exactly, assassination. With,
yes,
this,
yes,
this time they were going to be absolutely sure.
Yes, they didn't take any chance, like the first time when it was kind of clumsy, somebody hiding in a toilet at a petrol station, and you know. So they mm-hmm. came with AK-47, two of them, you know, playing mm-hmm. the car with, you know, thousands and dozens of bullets. Mm-hmm. They had come determined to kill him this time.
And I happened to be in Arusha. I was working for the lawyer there. I was in attendance when Besny stood up. He's a French lawyer. And he said, my witness has been assassinated in Nairobi. And there was silence in the court. I would say shock. But then they moved on. And yet, that was everything that happened was so blatant that it was like unspoken, what everybody understood. By the way, coming back to your letter, it's so important because you with this letter are not letting anyone forget that this actually happened and the details of what happened. Now, I have to ask you in the latter part of this our conversation, are you taking some heart from the fact that now books are finally starting to come out, which tell the story a little more accurately, particularly the role of President Paul Kagame, former general, that with the case of General Nyamwasa in South Africa, he, like Seth, was wounded, and then there was a second attempt on him. He's been, I think, wounded twice. Then there was Colonel Patrick Carrigay. You may know these gentlemen. These are former high-ranking, close associates of Paul Kagame, and they leave no doubt that the Rwandan government, is attempting to murder them. And in the case of Patrick Carrigay, they blatantly strangled him to death in South Africa. It's a morbid thing to say, but now we're seeing blatantly again, and the world is learning about this. Does this give you some hope that perhaps we're going to eventually get the facts out about Seth Sendashonga and the entire record of murdering political opponents?
Yes, you're right to mention also all these cases, and indeed, one would really hope that those two cases of really high-ranking former army officers in the Rwandan army, also, attempted attempts on their life, one on their life, with one of them, dying, Colonel Patrick Karigea, who at the time of the murder, of the assassination of Sendashonga, he was the chief of external intelligence in Rwanda. And I have to say, after he fled Rwanda, I actually met with him in South Africa as I was there for a meeting, part of my work. And we met, and he did tell me a lot of things about what he knew about the murder of Sendashonga. So then he was murdered also himself. And then, of course, the General Nyamwasa Kayumba, who survived two or three attempted murders. And what I find extraordinary, though, is that even with these cases were incidentally, in the case of Karigea, Kagame did almost the same thing as he did with the case of Sendashonga. He confessed that, I think, was 3-4 years ago.
Yes.
Saying that, why wouldn't we do it?
Yes.
And again, saying he's not apologetic about it.
No, the current president of the Francophonie countries, Mushikiwabo. It's Louise, I guess. She laughed in conversation with the children of the daughter
of Patrick Carrigan. So what is really shocking to see is that Kagame makes no secret that he's behind these killings, be it Sendashonga, now Karegeya, or the attempted murder General Kayumba Nyamwasa. And yet, the world seems to take no notice. He continues to be treated as a head of state. He's received at high levels by kings and queens and prime ministers and presidents. And
yes, he was at the G7. He went to the G7.
Yeah, he was at the G7 just this weekend, yesterday. It is shocking. And you wonder, going back to what you had said initially about the Arusha Tribunal, and at the beginning that is opening, you know, stated objective of ending a culture of impunity. And here we are.
Yes.
This is so many years later. A head of state known to be the one behind this crime. And nobody does anything about it. This is the thing that is shocking. Of course, I have hope because history teaches us a lot of lessons. These things, one day, will come a day when he will have to be accountable for what he did.
Yes.
And for now, he goes like, you know, he's untouchable. But history will catch up with him one day, for sure.
Well, he is, as you say, he's his own worst piece of evidence. He gives it out of his own mouth, which is, it is now, as you called him out, and we again, I will remind everybody, this is the widow of Seth Sendashonga, very distinguished woman who's done an awful lot of good work, by the way, in the years in between. But in May 16, wonderful timing, 2019, you have directly addressed the president of Uganda, who has a lot of responsibility in this matter, and the attorney general of the Republic of Kenya and the director of investigations in the Republic of Kenya, and of course the Kenyan government, but also the international community through the United Nations that promised that they were going to give true justice and end the culture of impunity. I thank you very much for writing the letter, and everyone admires your courage. But I do think that, you know, the books like that by Judy Reaver, there's the memoir now of the former United Nations ambassador of the United States of Rwanda, who was very close to Paul Kagame. There's Mr. David Himbara. Mm-hmm. All directly on there, standing up and clearly saying that this President Paul Kagame is guilty of heinous crimes. And the army of people saying that is growing. I hope you do take heart from that.
Yes, I do. Yeah. And I wish to thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you on this very important matter, you know, for me, for my children, for my family, but most importantly, for justice. Justice must be done. We cannot, the world cannot continue in this manner where we have heads of state who are bragging about ordering killings of their citizens. This just cannot be acceptable in a civilized world. So I thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, Siri Sendashonga, thank you very, very much. We look forward to talking to you again. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Siri Sendashonga. We're very glad we could do that interview. We will post her letter so that everyone can read what she had to say about this matter.